69, dudes!
Hello and welcome again to another edition of Jedi and Germs, a weekly podcast brought to you by TornbySports.com. I'm Alan Zog, the Jedi. He's John English, the Germs guy. And we're up to episode 69. Welcome.
Hello.
Cue a Beavis and Butthead, like, chuckle or reference in there somewhere. I don't know. Hey, John, how's it going?
Going good.
Yes.
I'm just dandy.
Awesome. And we're right in the middle of the finals, so this episode, I think, is going to be a bit on the heavy on the final side, and that's quite all right. You know, we'll pack it heavy and we'll enjoy it. So, Devin, anything?
Did you watch game three?
Yeah. Well, no. Okay. In all fairness, I don't get a chance to watch many of these games because I work. So no, I did not, but I watched the box score. And once again, with the Cleveland Cavaliers, I'm just going to make an observation out the gate here. I would call them the big three, but no Kevin Love. But three scorers for the Cavaliers, once again, were right there neck and neck with the Golden State Warriors team. You had LeBron, J.R. Smith, and Kyrie Irving all tallying, I think there was 80, I don't know what their final tally was, like 83 or 85 points. And it was just shy of where the Golden State Warriors had matched. So, once again, the starters for the Cavaliers were brilliant, and the bench was once again very disturbingly bad. At home, mind you.
Yeah, your top three for Cleveland had 83 points, and your top three for Golden State, no one in Golden State scored 20 points. So
no, and Golden State finished with how many points?
90.
Yeah, so 90 points for Golden State, 83 for three on the Cavaliers. Again, that's par the course for the Cavaliers, though. You look back at last series against Toronto. In their wins, the big three for the Cavaliers were staying within range of the entire opposition, the entire opposing team they were playing. So once again, it happens, you know, with the Golden State Warriors and the big three for the Cavaliers.
After the first two games, I figured the series was over. I still think Golden State's going to win, but it's nice that Cleveland fought back. I know I initially figured that before the series started, I said the Cavs would win, and I have no statistics for saying that. Now I would say I still think Warriors are going to win, but we at least all predicted that this would not be a quick series. And it was nice to see Cleveland fight back. But I, even after this, I don't see how the Warriors lose a home game. And game four is still going to be a challenge. I know they won easily tonight, but I believe in Steve Kerr's ability to adjust. And I still haven't heard officially if Kevin Love's going to be in game four or not.
I haven't heard
that
either.
Have you heard anything about that?
No, I haven't. And I mean, begin all of the narratives about that, because I don't know. I mean, a lot of people seem to think the Cavs played better and did better without him on the floor and would probably be better off without him. But I don't know. Your thoughts on that? I mean, I haven't heard whether he will play. Is it necessary for him to play, or can they win a game without him again?
They're better defensively without him. And offensively, they seem to have figured things out. The problem just in general, I would say, you had J.R. Smith had an amazing game, and you had Klay Thompson had a terrible game. And you're not going to give it time. Klay Thompson was only 1 for 7 from three. J.R. Smith, he was, what was he, 5 of 10 from three. He's usually not that good of a shooter. J.R. is really more of a streaky shooter. But I would say that game four will probably be closer. Actually, there's no reason to believe that. Every one of these games has not been close. The Warriors wiped them out twice, and then the Cavs wiped them out once.
Well, granted, the Warriors in both those cases didn't do it until late in the second half, whereas, well, game two was in the third quarter, but the Cavaliers really opened up a 19-4 run to start the game in last night's game or the night before's game and blew them out of the water first and foremost. But yeah, they've all been blowouts, so you don't know what to expect tonight. You really don't.
Some other things that jumped out to me. The Cavs had a 52-32 rebounding advantage. You're not gonna beat a team if you let them out rebound you by 20. The Warriors had more free throws, but they were only 65% from their free throws. The Warriors, they just look like they got knocked off their game early. And we're used to the Warriors being able to figure that stuff out and climb back in, and they never seem to figure. LeBron was his usual great self, but you know, this time his guard's shots were falling. Tristan Thompson was really good on defense this time. Draymond Green looked kind of lost at times. I mean, he only finished with 6 points, so it was a commendable effort. I questioned their ability to do it 3 more times, but at least the series is exciting again.
And yes, Golden State did seem off their game a bit. I think part of that is due to the fact that, you know, the Cavaliers, they came out, they punched first and knocked Golden State off their heels a little bit, and they never recovered. But you know, you mentioned Draymond Green looking lost. You know, it's funny because this is a guy who, you know, is an elite defender, but in two series now, I mean, this series, we haven't seen him for the entire series yet, but in the Oklahoma series, he looked lost for a good majority of that series on defense. He had guys like Roberson go backdoor on him and get easy buckets and things like that. And you started to wonder if OKC had found a way to go at Draymond Green a little bit and get some offense going. And I don't know if the Cavs are going to try and do the same thing or whether that was just one game where Draymond didn't play well. But it's interesting to me that we've watched Draymond have some very difficult times with his release man on defense.
Yeah, Oklahoma City seemed to figure him out by just being long and big. I mean, Oklahoma City has a lot of big guys, and Draymond really had to work for that kind of thing. I think the Thunder are actually a better team than the Cavaliers, and when I see it, what the Cavs were doing, they really had to rely on their outside shooting to get a lot of it to happen, and they were really good. What were they? They were 48% from three overall for the night.
Yes.
That's really good.
Well, and again, this finals is featuring the two best three-point shooting teams in the playoffs. I mean, both of these teams have shot extremely well from downtown for most of the playoffs, and they're the best. They're the best the NBA has to offer. So the fact that the Cavaliers were finally able to burst that bubble and hit threes in game three, it was a good thing. I'd want to believe that they can do it again, because again, this is a team that jacks up 25-30 a game and can usually make, you know, between 15 and 20 of them on a consistent basis and have all playoffs long.
Richard Jefferson is starting for a team in the NBA finals. Did the Jazz give up on him too soon?
somehow we figured that was going to be inserted somewhere here. Yeah, that's a good point. I wonder how Jazz...
By that logic, they gave up on Paul Millsap too soon too.
Right. Well, and I wonder how... You know, this is opening old wounds, but I wonder how some Jazz fans feel that were frustrated with Richard Jefferson at the Jazz, how they feel about him getting the time he's getting on a finals team right now, like he is. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't bother me. I think it's good for him. I'm happy for him, but.
You really think people are going to complain about that?
No. No.
You really think someone's out there like, you know what? We should have kept him.
No, that's not.
We should have traded Hayward.
Okay, you're misunderstanding where I went with that. It was not the, oh, we should have kept him. It's the, oh, good heavens. He's actually contributing as a starter on the Cleveland team. Oh, gosh. cry, you know, shoot me now. You know, a few people might be thinking negatively on that one. That's what I was getting at there.
We had this conversation, Sean, one of our listeners, and I had this conversation. Richard Jefferson is essentially the Pharrell of the NBA because I don't think he looks any older than he did 15 years ago.
Wow.
He's playing like that.
Yeah.
You know, you've seen RJ throw down some dunks.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, and I was going to ask you too, John, and we were talking briefly before the show. Did you get a chance to watch Coach Nick's B-ball breakdown, the 19-4 run breakdown of the beginning of the game?
Oh, I didn't watch that.
Okay, so he broke it down and really he talked about it. And Coach Nick, I love his blatant honesty and everything. It's funny, he'll watch certain plays and he'll say, you know, Kyrie blatantly fouls Steph Curry and they ignore it. And then they move down to the other floor. He'll say stuff like that, but it was interesting. Mm-hmm. Some of the points he made were very similar to the points you just made. He pointed to one particular play where Klay Thompson went to the hoop, missed the shot, got two free throws and just missed them horribly. He's like, you know, a lot of what you're watching in this 19-4 run and really in the game overall was just the Warriors playing badly. And he says, and they were out of their game. And he even did not attribute it to the Cavaliers defense or playing at all. He just attributed it to the Warriors getting away from what they do. I don't know if I want to completely give or take away credit from the Cavaliers because I think the Cavaliers did some things, but it would you agree with him? I mean, was this game the Warriors?
Well, for that section, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they'll have parts where they do that, and then Kerr called timeout and gets them. There's a reason Klay was 1-for-7, and it wasn't because J.R. Smith was playing awesome defense. I mean, he was good. But yeah, Klay did rush shots. The Warriors in general seem to rush a lot of shots. There seem to be different parts where they're behind and panic seemed to set in, and then it would just perpetuate, and then they'd call timeout and try to calm down again. It was strange. I mean, there were parts of this game where they seemed to be playing like Cleveland had the better record, if you know what I mean. Like,
yeah.
Like it's the first round of the playoffs and Warriors didn't have home court advantage. There seemed to be some of that nervous energy in there that didn't yield good results for them. Especially in the beginning.
Now, I'm going to somewhat disagree with you. I felt like the Cavs really played some smothering defense on them. I do agree, however, that Golden State rushed some shots. There was a fast break where Klay goes and shoots a three on the fast break. I think he had a one-on-one. I want to say there was another one where they could have gone for a layup, but there was a bad pass, and it ended up shooting a three on like a 2-on-1 fast break. But really, that's Golden State's game. And people may not like that I say this. Are you ready for it?
We're ready.
Golden State Warriors do not necessarily...
Do you want a drum roll?
I did, but I can only do so much. They do not have good shot selection a lot of the time.
I'm glad you went there. I was going to go there the same way. Golden State does not have good shot selection. I mean, let's be honest. Even some of their regular shots, you go back to the Oklahoma City series when Klay Thompson went off in that second half, a lot of the shots he took were contested, were rushed, were really not good shots, but they went in. And so this game three against the Cavaliers, some of those shots that Klay took were not out of the norm for him. They just didn't go in, and that's just how it is.
And I've said this about Steph Curry, and some people have said, well, that's his ability to create his own shot, and it still goes in. And I say, yes, that is partially true. But can you imagine what their percentages would be? I mean, there are ways to get guys open for a three.
Yes.
You can have Draymond set an illegal screen because that seems to be allowed anymore. And get a guy open. But can you imagine the percentages if they had time to get a good shot on the line, not 4 feet, 5 feet behind the three-point line? It works for them, but I'm just saying it is not
No.
Really clean, efficient basketball.
Well, and I agree. And after watching what Coach Nick said, I'm going to agree with him too, that there are some points during the offensive sets for Golden State where, you know, the screens they set, the off-ball screens, the plays off the horns, you know, the things that they do are very precise, and they weren't so precise against Cleveland in game three. And so those precise plays will normally get them shots. But no, I'm with you. Devin, I'm reading you loud and clear, and I'm with you 100% on that. I think give Cleveland credit, because I think that they did some things to knock Golden State in the mouth and take them out of their game a bit. But then when they got taken out of their game, instead of recovering, like John said, Kerr taking a timeout and then recovering, they never really could. And you know, you expect them to make adjustments for tonight, and you would expect that they will not allow that to happen again. But game on, you know, game three happened. I think game on. I think tonight is going to be one of those games that is, well, obviously important for Cleveland. But if Cleveland wins tonight, guys, series is tied up and game on.
You know, I'm just saying, if you're down by 15 points and you've got a layup, you're either going to get a layup or you're going to get fouled, or maybe you'll get both and get the 3-point play. But get your points where you can. And don't force the three. And it's completely different. If you're in a close game, or if you're up by 5-10 points and you want to start throwing up a three on a fast break and everything's going your way, go for it. But when you don't have that momentum and you're trying to catch up, you take your points where you can get them. That's my opinion. John, thoughts? Am I off base here, or are you going to come to the dark side with me and Alan?
Well, here's the other thing to remember about the rebounding advantage that the Cavs had. That led to that many more shot attempts. I mean, the Cavs had 15 more shot attempts. They had 16 more makes. You know, they created those opportunities, and they were able to get those rebounds at a much easier rate because of the bad shots that the Warriors were taking. You know, the Warriors had rebounds to the Cavs 35 defensive rebounds. The Cavs had 17 offensive rebounds to the Warriors 24. That is a wide margin of difference.
And you know what?
That's going to lead to easier shots.
I'm not going to lie. I would expect the Cavs to out-rebound Golden State in every game, though, because between LeBron and Tristan Thompson alone, you're getting nearly 20 rebounds. You can scatter a few rebounds amongst the rest of the team. That the Cavs should be out rebounding Golden State every game, unless Golden State's just not missing.
Well, yeah, they need to miss to get a rebound.
Right.
One thing I wanted to touch on.
I'm actually going to look in the. Yeah, go ahead.
There, and Alan, you're probably not going to be able to chime in, and I'm sorry because you had to see it. But there was a play, I believe it was in the first or second quarter, where Mozgov is going to set a screen. He doesn't get set, and Thompson takes a knee to the thigh and has to go back into the locker room. Post-game comments, Klay Thompson says, "Yeah, I thought it was kind of a dirty play." Did you see that as a dirty play?
Do you remember that play or no?
Yeah.
Well, apparently Klay had called it a dirty play after the game. Did you see it as a dirty play?
Oh, no. No, that's maybe they're trying to get in the head with the refs by saying something like that. I mean, there have been some dirty plays. I think Draymond's tendency to kick his leg as hard as he can when he misses a shot is going to lead to dirty plays. I didn't think the one on Klay was dirty.
Right. And there was a game. It was, I think, game two, where Dele takes a swipe at the ball and makes contact with Iggy in a place where you don't want contact to be made on a basketball court.
Yeah.
Nutshot.
And after the game, they asked Iggy, they said, "Was that a dirty play?" And he goes, "No, he was just going for the ball. I don't think it was a dirty play." And I don't know if that's because Iggy is a better sport than Klay. Klay had a bad game. I don't know if the winning maturity versus losing kind of changes that. Like, oh, we won the game, I'm not going to complain about it, but we lost the game. Now, it just, it was really odd to me to see that contrast between the two. Because really, when you think about it, Clay runs in to Mozgov, and I said this while I was watching it. I said, Mozgov's really lucky he got off that leg, because the way he hit, he could have easily hyperextended that left leg and had a knee injury where he was back in the locker room.
Right. And yeah. I see where you're going with that, because, you know, Draymond Green's had a lot worse plays this entire playoffs and has gotten off fairly easy on most of them, and yet Golden State Warriors fans and Klay Thompson crying wolf with this one. And yeah, it's, yeah,
right.
I get it.
You just got routed. Okay, you lost the game. It happens. Quit your boohoo and say we took some bad shots. We weren't making what we normally make. We're going to come back and play better next game, and that's right. The end of it.
No, I agree. So, John, you were looking up some numbers.
Yeah, the Warriors out-rebounded the Cavs in game two, so they could do it again.
Yeah, they could. No, here's my keys for game four. Some things that I think I'd like to see from the Cavaliers if they're going to win. Their bench is atrocious and really has been. And credit to the Warriors, because the Warriors have some guys on the bench that are really legitimately starters. You know, in Iggy and guys, you know, Iggy and Livingston and guys like that. But and the Warriors will, let's face it, are deeper. But I fully expected, when you're at home. And we all know this in the NBA, when you're at home is when your bench plays the best. And again, in game three, we got atrocious play from the Cavs bench. They weren't really good at all. In fact, I dare say, I think they only had 3 to 5 points off the bench through almost three quarters. And it wasn't till the fourth quarter, when it was garbage time, that you got some bench points. So my key for the Cavs in game four, their bench has to come to play, and they have to play well.
Well, yeah, but Richard Jefferson is part of that bench, but he has to move to the starting lineup because Love's out. So I wouldn't expect their bench to have been that good. I mean, that's the game where you really needed their starters to starters. You know, the Warriors bench wasn't that great either until the end, when it's garbage time, and then Barbosa gets a couple points, and then everyone else.
Well, and I get
jumps
it.
On the court,
and too. I get it. The playoffs are starter time. That's where your big guns make a difference. But even then, when you're at home in home games, your bench comes to play. You go back to game two and game one. Game two specifically, that third and fourth quarter, Golden State's bench went on a tear. They were up at one time, I think 25-5 in bench points. I mean, you know, and back then they had Love starting. My point is that regardless of who steps in, the bench has to come together and play and contribute a little more than that, I think, in order for the Cavs to be a little better and to be able to win game four. That's one of them. The other thing is Kyrie Irving has to come and have another game three performance in game four. Kyrie was incredible in game three. And I didn't watch it, but I saw some highlights. I saw the box score. Kyrie Irving took Curry to school for a good portion of that game.
Yeah, it was only when Delly came in that Curry was able to get the advantage. I thought that was funny that of all the plus minuses that look great for the Cavs, Delly is a minus 10 in 7.5 minutes, because as soon as Kyrie sat down, Warriors went right after Delly.
Which is not surprising.
I do it too.
Well, yeah. But I mean, and I watched some, like I said, I watched some of the highlights. Kyrie was putting on a clinic, on a dribble clinic, really. I mean, he was shooting lights out. And that's what you want from Kyrie if you're a Cavs fan and if you're the Cavs, period. You want that from Kyrie every night. If you get that from Kyrie every night, and he and LeBron are feeding off each other and playing well off each other, the Cavs are practically unbeatable at that point. But you have to get that almost every night from Kyrie. And there's been moments like games one and two, really, where he wasn't that great. And so, I, you know, we need to see more from Kyrie, I think.
What do you think the Kerr's going to do in game four to adjust? Do you think he just goes ahead and starts Iggy?
He might.
It only played 12 minutes.
Well, and he could start that small lineup. And you know, I, you know, it's funny. You want to put him on LeBron, and you have to think that that's what you want to do is put the pressure on LeBron. But I don't think the problem for the Cavs is LeBron at all. I mean, LeBron had a game two that was horrible, and he'll tell you that. But next to that, it's the supporting cast. So do you take LeBron out and you know, guard him up close, put Iggy on him, frustrate him like you did last finals, and let the rest of the team kill you, or do you guard the rest of the team and let LeBron try and beat you single handedly?
Oh, that's a good one. I'm more inclined to think LeBron's going to get his either ways. You just want to make sure everyone else is shut down.
Yeah. And that's what I'm thinking. That's why I don't know. I mean, if they put Iggy in the starting lineup, you almost have to think it makes sense that they're going to put him on LeBron. Because again, Iggy made a huge difference in last year's finals when he was put on LeBron. He guarded him well. So, but I agree with you. Yeah, I think Iggy in the starting lineup might be just what Kerr decides to go with. But even then, you look at the offense. I mean, I'm not even looking at defense. On the offensive side of the ball, I expect Kerr to just look at his guys and say, guys, we've got to be smarter. We've got to be more precise on our cuts, more precise on our screens. We have to stick to our game plan. Because obviously in game three, there were moments when they went away from their game plan, and they can't have that on a regular basis.
Yep.
So... all right, so predictions. Who wins game four?
Ooh. Yeah. It's tough.
Cleveland.
Warriors.
It's not tough.
So John went with Warriors. He was having a hard time, but I could see Devin over here just waiting. He's like, nah, this isn't even tough. I'm going with Cleveland. And I'm going to go with Devin here. I'm going to go Cleveland. I don't think it's going to be a blowout, though. I think it's going to be a much closer game, but I think it's going to be high scoring. I wouldn't mind seeing it go to overtime, but I could see this game being right around a 110 to 105 kind of game, 112, 107, something like that kind of game.
See, and that's where I'm at. I don't see Cleveland winning by more than 10 points, but you're talking about a team who has some momentum finally coming into this game. Hopefully they're finding their stroke again. Like you were saying, you remember them dropping, was it 23 threes against Atlanta? So if they can get it going, home crowd should be able to pull this one out, not the series at two. And then it's good times. Cause I really want a game seven.
Like I said, game on. I mean, it is game on,
but let's listen to John's logic.
Golden State.
You can call it logic.
Oh, and meanwhile, next week.
Picking against Golden State has burned me every for them this time. They're historically one of the best teams ever in the NBA. I believe Chicago in Kerr's Bulls. Ability to adjust more than lose. I said one of.
I know, I'm kidding.
So... I think the Warriors will be able to start the game not down 4-19, and if you stay close with the Warriors, they can get hot really, really fast.
I'm sorry, John. All I heard was LeBron James. LeBron James.
I'll tell you this. I want game four to go down to the wire in the fourth quarter or overtime, and I want it to be the Steph Curry versus LeBron James show. And we'll see what happens. The problem is it's just not LeBron's game. I mean, Steph will just jack shots and just go. LeBron's not like that. He never has been. LeBron likes the plays, likes to run the offense the way it should be, get his teammates in the game and stuff like that. He's never one to exact himself in the game and take over. I want to see that. I want to see when the game is on the line, I want LeBron to just pull what he did against the Celtics so many years ago and just take over and dominate.
Well, I can tell you this. If Steph Curry goes to dunk the ball and LeBron is in the area, it doesn't matter if the whistle has blown.
Oh, boy.
That shot is getting blocked.
All right, we're done talking finals now. Now we're just getting ridiculous. All right, next. let's talk Utah Jazz. Got some things you wanted to talk about on this episode with the Jazz.
Well, When it comes to off-season trades, everyone's favorite trade piece is Alec Burks. He is now, you have to think, untradeable with this recent news about his knee. He had surgery to get debris out of his knee, which just seems weird. What debris exactly? I mean, I know the logical answer, but just scraping out debris in someone's knee makes me wonder if I got debris just floating around my knee that should be scraped out.
You know what? I don't even think you want to visit that, because that's just painful to think about. Let's just not go there.
Yeah, but when you say debris, yeah. I feel like stuff just like blew in there. He was walking outside and like dirt blew into his leg.
Yeah, like someone had a leaf blower and some of it lodged in Alec Burks' knee. What all's in there? It's like dried leaves and...
I'm about to go Jimmy Fallon on both of you.
There's a lollipop stick in there somewhere.
L. Seriously, Jimmy Fallon is just... It's L. No, I'm just not. No. it's probably a good thing that they're doing this, though. I mean, get him ready for the season, but... I don't know that he was – I know where you were going with this is that in the discussions of trades, I don't think he's a piece that they were ever going to trade. But you're right. I think with this, with them doing this now, it kind of takes him off of the market for trading and for moving. And you know, they're going to put him on the protective shelf until the season starts. But what they're saying is that he'll be ready to go by season start. So,
And don't get us wrong, people, listeners. He could still be traded. He could. But it's just going to hurt the value more because you haven't seen him healthy.
And it'll hurt the Jazz more if they trade him.
Right. They really won't get his value back out. It's kind of better to ride this one out and see how he comes back after all these injuries.
I'm still a firm believer that when Alec Burks is healthy, he is a massive X factor for the Jazz and their success. So I just massive. Anyway,
firm believer.
Wow. All right. John, other Jazz news. You wanted to talk about the 12th pick?
Yeah, the great debate this offseason is, will the Jazz keep the 12th pick or will they trade it? I've seen arguments that I can't remember who reported it, but they said that they're hearing of all the lottery teams, the Jazz is the most likely to trade their pick. I also heard Locke the other day giving his explanation on why he's more inclined to think they keep the 12th pick. With this Burks news, it actually makes the idea of a trade less likely on draft night. I've been at the players more closely with the assumption that they're going to keep the pick and try to get an idea of what the Jazz would want to do. And they keep talking about the tiers in this draft. And, you know, what I'm gathering from all the different mock drafts and what scouts are saying, and I watched a lot of the highlight videos. You have Ben on Brandon Ingram, number two, and that's pretty clear. And then the next five or six players seem to be pretty set. So you have Dragan Bender, Marquise Chris Dunn, Buddy Hield, Jamal Murray, Jaylen Brown. If any of those guys happen to fall to 12, I would think the Jazz would take them. After that, there's kind of two different groups. There's the big man group, which Jakob Poeltl is at the top of, but you also have Henry Ellenson, Scott Libicier from Kentucky, Deontay Davis. These are other big guys. Sabonis is there. He's another one with promise that, you know, they're going to hovering around 12. The Jazz will have their pick of most of those guys, I would think.
So here's,
then you also have the guards. Go ahead.
Here's a question I was going to ask you, though, back to the point of whether they'd move it or not. One of our listeners, Brett Austin, brought up the other day on Twitter to me, What would the Jazz? He brought up a post where it mentioned that the Clippers are interested in moving up in the lottery, and moving up there. Say the Clippers eyeball the 12th spot. Maybe they see something that they'll actually eventually take there. Who on the Clippers team do you think is worth moving your 12th pick for? And what else would you have to move to get that player? Is there anyone on the Clippers that interests you?
Yeah, but they're clear down there at 25. So there has to be a player. The player has to be good enough. You'd be, I mean, trading 12 clear down to 25 is essentially trading your first round pick away.
Which in the case of the Jazz, again, we've talked about, is not out of the realm of possibility. It's not something that I could see them do that. And that's why I ask, if they did that, is there a player on the Clippers that the Jazz would be willing to trade for that might eyeball that might, you know, satiate your desire a little bit?
I mean, I think Blake Griffin would be a good fit on the Jazz. They're not going to do that for just 12, and I don't know how much else I'd want to give up for Blake. Other players, JJ Redick. You give up the 12th pick to get JJ Redick?
I would. I don't think the Clippers would.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing is I would do that because I think that would be a great move. But, you know, it's back to, and this is what I said to Brett on Twitter in the conversation. I said, what would the Clippers be willing to give for that 12th pick? Because it's not so much what the Jazz would give or who they'd go after, but would the Clippers bite and would they take it? And on JJ Redick, I'm inclined to say no.
Yeah. And so, and there aren't, and half of their roster's free agents this summer anyway.
Right.
I mean, Paul Pierce, I'm not going to give up 12th pick for 1 year.
No.
Paul Pierce.
No.
CJ Wilcox, no.
Jamal Crawford, no, because you've already got Alec Burks. And I just feel like Jamal Crawford and Alec Burks are a similar type. What you get, you know, you're getting that six-man role.
Jamal's a free agent. Jeff Green's a free agent.
Right.
Austin Rivers has a player option, but I wouldn't give up number 12 for him.
No.
Cole Aldrich, Wesley Johnson, they have player options. I think they'll just opt out of those and see if they can't get more in the open market.
Right.
And that's really about it. So
there you go, Brett. There's your answer.
I don't know.
I don't know that there are players that intrigue us, but in the end, between player options and really, I don't think that the Clippers would give up much if they didn't have to. I just don't think it would happen.
Well, maybe you do something like this. Maybe they just trade number 12 to Clippers for number 25 and a first rounder next year.
Right. Could do that. But then the Jazz still have to go out and find a veteran too, which you know they're going to do.
Yeah, but they're not drafting veterans. So
exactly.
If they're who's likely going to be further down their depth chart than number 12 would be, they have great intent this some veterans that are going to help them win.
Right.
So if you do that, oh, hang on. I'm going to see if the Clippers owe their 2017 first rounder already.
Oh, okay. There you go. No, and I think that was part of that Doc Rivers trade, wasn't it?
Yeah, Clippers don't have much they can do.
I didn't think so.
When it comes to future picks.
Yeah, that move.
So I can understand why they'd like to climb up this year because they're not going to be able to next year or 2019.
Well, and back to what you mentioned, they're going to want to climb up this year because not just because of next year, but because also they have a bunch of guys that might opt out and move on. And suddenly the Clippers are left scrambling to find players and find suitors that want to come play. So, yep. All right. Back to your thoughts on the 12th. We'll probably have to talk about this more. I know you talked about having Spencer Wixom on and talking about it. We can talk more in depth about who the Jazz pick at 12 maybe on the next episode. I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I was going to say, we'll be talking to Spencer Tuesday night about what he's seeing and what he thinks they're going to do. And then by next week when we record, I think we'll have a better idea. There will have been more workouts, and the draft picture, I think, will become more into focus.
And by the way, folks, the draft is 2 weeks away, 2 weeks from last night.
Yeah, 2 weeks, and it's quite in flux. This draft reminds me a lot of 2013. Where 2013, I mean, Kyrie Irving was obviously the star, and then after that, you really weren't sure what was gonna, who these get. And this feels like that. I mean, it feels like it's Simmons number one, Ingram number two, and then after that, who knows what we really have in this draft.
You mean there might be an Enes Kanter at number three?
Added at 15.
Oh, all right. So look for that, folks. We'll talk more in depth about the draft next week. Any other thoughts on the Jazz 12th or anything else you want to throw in there?
Well, I'm just going to say this.
Okay. Devin's got something.
If you want to compare the 2013 draft, number 12 yielded Steven Adams. So maybe consider keeping that pick. Maybe.
12 is a crapshoot, well, though, really. It is. I mean, it is. Jazz have two players they took at 12.
Yeah. Trey Lyles, Alec Burks, Steven Adams was at 12. Let's see, who was it 2 years ago? Dario Saric was number 12. He's supposed to be a stud. He's finally coming over this year. Let's go to 2011. Oh, that was out. That was... I got my years wrong. Okay, 2012, it was Jeremy Lamb. So that can also happen to you at 12.
Yeah, that's a good point. So, I mean, yeah, good point, Devin. I mean, the 12th pick could produce any one number of players in that
spectrum.
Thank you. I was looking for that word.
I got my years wrong. Kyrie Irving was the 2011 draft. That was the one I was thinking of.
Oh, okay. All right.
2013 was the one that was actually worse, because that was the one where Anthony Bennett went number one.
Ah, yeah.
That was the year where we just had no clue what these people were. And, you know, that's been like one of the worst drafts.
Anthony Bennett.
But there have been some good players.
Where did Bennett go?
He's out of the league.
Yeah, but where did he go that year? Who took him?
Cleveland.
Oh, that's right.
Cleveland took him. They traded him to Minnesota with the LeBron thing, and then Minnesota waived him.
That's right.
I think he seems like he wound up in Toronto somehow.
Where did he play college? Point, wasn't Anthony Bennett out of
UNLV?
UNLV. That's right. That was the year that Cleveland surprised everybody. I don't think, wasn't that the same year that a certain big man out of Philadelphia was taken in the draft too? Noel?
No, that was the year that
Noel was.
Yeah, I'm talking about Noel.
Yeah, you're right.
Noel was taken in that draft, and I think everybody expected Noel to go higher, and Cleveland surprised everybody and took Bennett, because I think Noel was expected to go number one or number two.
He had some injury concerns, if I remember, coming into the league, and so that he really dropped right at the.
Yeah, that's true.
Right on draft night.
Right at the last second.
Yeah. So
it was still a shock that he fell to six.
And it was still a shock, like you said, that Cleveland took nobody. I mean, nobody expected Bennett to go number one. Nobody expected Cleveland to make that move.
Yeah, it wound up being the wrong move, just a completely blown pick.
Yeah, it did.
Man, now you got me looking at this draft. It was an interesting one. You know, Steven Adams at 12, Greek Freak at 15, Schroeder at 17.
If you redraft, wouldn't those three
Rudy
end up
Gobert
going
27?
But yeah. if you redraft that, wouldn't three of those guys go? Those three guys that you mentioned, and even Rudy for that matter, go higher on that draft?
Oh yeah, well so would CJ McCollum,
right?
Who was 10?
Wow. So yeah.
Anyways,
all right. Well, that's your draft talk for this week. I don't know that I have much to consider in the pop culture topic spectrum. You got anything, John?
Have you seen X-Men yet?
I have not.
Oh. I liked it. I know critics have torn it apart. I've seen some of the complaints. But I was in the whole time. I would say my biggest pet peeve about it is First Class took place in 1962. Days of Future Past took place in 1973. And now Apocalypse takes place in 1983. So the characters are now 21 years older.
And they don't look it.
And they don't look it. They all look 5 years older because they are 5 years older, not 21 years older.
Right.
And there's not that much effort to age them either. And so when I'm watching them here, I'm thinking to myself, it's only in 17 more years that Professor is supposed to look like Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen, and they just do not look like they're getting there. There must be some cataclysm in the 90s that suddenly ages everybody 20 years. But I enjoyed the New Mutants. I thought it wasn't as good as Captain America: Civil War, but I enjoyed the pace and I enjoyed a lot of the interactions with some of these characters. And you know, I'd be fine seeing the next one with a lot of these people. I liked the younger Cyclops and Jean Grey and Storm.
The real question is, are they going to do another one? Because I did see you on social media mention that you liked it, which was refreshing because I want to go see it. And I know my son will want to go see it. I'm surprised he hasn't asked me yet, but I have heard nothing but really just negative reviews about it overall. And a lot of folks after seeing this really feel like, you know, it's time to put the X-Men franchise to bed and not even reboot it because they don't think you can really revive it. You know, this attempt to revive it didn't work. And so a lot of people feel like it's time to put this baby to bed. But reading what you said, the fact that you liked it, it actually encourages me. I want to go see it just for that reason, because I have a feeling that I will probably like it, even if it is garnering negative reviews.
Be throwing money away if they just put it to bed. I mean, if it bombed like the Fantastic Four remake, then yeah. But it's doing well. It's not doing as well as Days of Future Past, but it's doing better than First Class, and said it's worldwide this week. Gonna make its money. And Fox is financially motivated to keep the Marvel product and not turn them over to the Sony. So, you know, they're going to hang on to X-Men. They have the Wolverine sequel coming. They have Deadpool. There's a stinger at the end of X-Men Apocalypse that no one in my audience knew what it meant. So I went home and looked it up and, you know, went, ah, this is what this means. And that's cool. So they have the keep goobies in this universe. Hugh Jackman said his next one will be his last Wolverine movie, but there's enough here there with the other characters that they could still make this work. And who knows, maybe Fox will try to reboot Fantastic things going.
Yeah, that's true. So, and a lot of what you said, I apologize, you know, our listener, we had some connections issues there, so I couldn't hear everything of what you said. You were breaking up a little bit, but I followed what you said and I agree with you. I just all I had to do was point to the fact that there has been a lot of people that have been saying, hey, this is done. This is no good anymore. But I'm with you. And Days of Future Past, I liked a lot. And to be honest, I've never had a problem with any of the X-Men movies, really. I've actually enjoyed them from an entertainment value, every single one of them. So
except The Last Stand.
Huh?
I liked them all except The Last Stand.
Oh, well, and then the other one I did have a problem with was the Wolverine Origins film. I had some issues with that.
Oh,
one.
Yeah, that was bad.
Yeah, it was horrible. But the rest of them I've really not had issues with, so I've been okay with them. I'm opposed to the idea of putting it to bed or rebooting it, and I think it's sad every time you have to consider rebooting again, just like Marvel's had to do with Spider-Man countless times, is to have to reboot it. It's like, don't. And even Batman, DC's doing it to Batman. Don't reboot. Please, let's not do this. Because each time you reboot it, you think you're going to get it right, and then you don't. There's no point in it at that point in time. So,
rebooting Batman, they're considering it continuing on. There's a difference between recasting and rebooting. I look at what they're doing with Batman, like what they do with James Bond, where they just put in new actors and keep going. And I think that's what they're doing.
Yeah, but the Dark Knight series felt like a reboot. You know,
are you going to say you didn't like the Dark Knight series?
Yeah, they rebooted that.
That's what I'm saying. The Dark Knight series felt like a reboot off of the original. And
but
I
that's
have not,
your argument?
But, oh,
that,
come on.
They needed to reboot Batman after Schumacher ruined it.
Well.
Are you complaining about the Dark Knight trilogy?
No, I'm not complaining about it.
I think he is, John.
No, I'm not. Both of you stop it. I'm not complaining. I'm just.
I think you are.
No, I'm not. Oh, now you guys are both
you
just throwing
miss Clooney Batman. Truth comes out.
No, all I did right. not say I miss Clooney Batman. Actually, I kind of miss I kind of miss Val Kilmer Batman, but that's just me.
Yeah, that is just you.
I actually enjoyed that one. Batman Forever I enjoyed, but you know, I Keaton Batman was great. I loved
yeah,
him.
Yeah.
So.
But no, I mean when they did Batman Begins happen and what they've done with it was great. You know, third one has problems, but then what they're doing with Ben Affleck, they haven't rebooted it as they're continuing the story. Although I will say, you don't need to see Batman's parents murdered ever again.
No, I agree. I don't, I'm sick of them showing that or the way he meets the bats or everything in every single one of them. They don't need to tell the backstory. We all know the backstory by now. Let's proceed forward, please.
Yeah, they handled it quickly, though, so that was nice.
Other than the fact that the bats were making him float in midair.
Yeah. Dream sequence?
Anyway, all right. Well, you know, and I can't think of anything else. I haven't seen much new right now. So, Devin, you got anything else to throw into the pop culture conversation?
Well, there is one show that I'm happy is back.
What's that?
And you can judge me. You can judge me.
Go ahead. Bring it on.
I thoroughly enjoy America's Got Talent, especially the auditions. Mm-hmm. And I was really intrigued when I saw that Simon Cowell was going to be a judge. So we've got four judges from other countries who are judging America's Talent.
Mel B. Simon.
Well, Howie's American.
Yeah,
no,
Howie's
not.
Yes, he is.
No, he's not.
Is he Canadian?
He is.
All Howie's right then. I guess he's Canadian. Did not know that.
I'm back.
And then Heidi Klum.
Huh.
Very good.
So there's your fun fact. But anytime I can watch a golden retriever dancing on stage, it just makes me happy. And so that's my like, hey.
And I'll
this
stop.
Show's available now.
I'll stop anyone from listening. Don't make fun of him on that one because that actually happens to be something quite cherished for him. So I think that's a pretty cool thing. So
and it's just fun to watch.
Yes, it is.
You can watch it.
I've watched America's Got Talent occasionally. Is the host still Nick Cannon?
It is.
Ah, I love Nick Cannon.
I think he's great. I do not think he will succeed in his rap battle challenge to Eminem. But he's a good host.
You ever want to see classic Nick Cannon, go back and watch Wild and Out?
They started doing that again, didn't
they? Yes, they did. And it's funny. All of it. Hilarious. All the time. He has some great hosts on. It's worth watching. So,
see, and he's got the style. The
yes,
shoes.
He does. Yes, he does. So, all right. Well, there's your pop culture edition of The Jedi and Germs. Unless there's anything else the two of you want to add, let's close this baby up, wrap it up with a nice little bow, put a pretty little glitter on it. Episode 69 with glitter and a bow.
Sparkly episode.
Thank you all for joining us for another edition of Jedi and Germs. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter, Jedi and Germs. You can find us on Stitcher and iTunes, Jedi and Germs. Please leave us a review on iTunes. We didn't get a chance to bring this up last time. Will the person who left the last review, who watched it, listens to the show while doing laundry and drinking, what was it?
Doing dishes.
Oh, doing dishes and drinking.
I know who that was.
Was that Saul?
Are we
convinced it's Saul?
I will not say who it was, but I know who it was.
Well, whoever it is, thanks for leaving the review. Folks, we do read them. We appreciate it. Please leave us a review. They're appreciated. They give us the feel goods, but they also help us out in iTunes. So check us out. You can find us on Google Play as well, by the way. If you don't use either of the other formats, Google Play handles podcasts. You can find Jedi and Germs on Google Play. All a part of the Torn by Sports podcasting network. Go to tornbysports.com and listen, download to any of our other wonderful podcasts, and you can find them there. Thank you for joining us. Have a good week. John, take us out.
Bye, everybody.